At length they, too, passed from sight. The time dragged on. The clouds lowered, and now a few flakes of snow came curling down again. An hour, maybe, went by, though it seemed far longer, and then at last they saw Legolas coming back. At the same time Boromir and Aragorn reappeared round the bend far behind him, and came labouring up the slope. "Well," cried Legolas as he ran up, "I've not brought the sun. She's walking in the blue fields of the south, and a little wreath of snow on this Redhorn hillock troubles her not at all. But I've brought back a gleam of good hope for those who are doomed to go on feet. There is the greatest wind drift of all just beyond the turn, and there our strong men are almost buried. They despaired until I returned and told them that the drift was little wider than a wall, and on the other side the snow suddenly grows less, while further down it is no more than a white coverlet to cool a hobbit's toes."
"Ah, it's as I said," growled Gimli. "It was no ordinary storm. It's the ill will of Carathras. He does not love elves and dwarves, and that drift was laid to cut off our escape."
"But happily your Carathras has forgotten that you have men with you," said Boromir, who came up at that moment, "and doughty men too, if I may say it, though lesser men with spades might have served you better. Still, we've thrust a lane through the drift, and for that all here may be grateful who cannot run as light as elves."
"But how are we to get down there, even if you have cut through the drift?" said Pippin, voicing the thought of all the hobbits.
"Have hope," said Boromir. "I am weary, but I still have some strength left, and Aragorn too. We will bear the little folk. The others, no doubt, will make shift to tread the path behind us. Come, Master Peregrine, I'll begin with you." He lifted up the hobbit. "Cling to my back. I shall need my arms," he said, and strode forward. Aragorn with Merry came behind. Pippin marvelled at his strength, seeing the passage that he had already forced with no other tool than his great limbs. Even now, burdened as he was widening the track of those who followed, thrusting the snow aside as he went. They came at length to the great drift. It was flung across the mountain path like a sheer and sudden wall, and its crest, sharp as if shaped with knives, reared up more than twice the height of Boromir. But through the middle a passage had been beaten, rising and falling like a bridge. On the far side Merry and Pippin were set down, and there they waited with Legolas for the rest of the company to arrive. After a while Boromir returned, carrying Sam. Behind in the narrow but now well-trodden track came Gandalf, leading Bill with Gimli perched among the baggage. Last came Aragorn, carrying Frodo. They passed through the lane, but hardly had Frodo touched the ground when with a deep rumble there rolled down a fall of stones and slithering snow. The spray of it half blinded the company as they crouched against the cliff, and when the air cleared again they saw that the path was blocked behind them.
"Enough, enough," cried Gimli. "We're departing as quickly as we may."
And indeed, with that last stroke, the malice of the mountain seemed to be expended, as if Carathras was satisfied that the invaders had been beaten off and would not dare to return. The threat of snow lifted, the clouds began to break, and the light grew broader. As Legolas had reported, they found that the snow became steadily more shallow as they went down, so that even the hobbits could trudge along. Soon they all stood once more on the flat shelf at the head of the steep slope where they had felt the first flakes of snow the night before. The morning was now far advanced. From the high place they looked back westwards over the lower lands. Far away in the tumble of country that lay at the foot of the mountain was the dell from which they had started to climb the pass. Frodo's legs ached. He was chilled to the bone and hungry, and his head was dizzy as he thought of the long and painful march downhill. Black specks swam before his eyes. He rubbed them, but the black specks remained. In the distance below him, but still high above the lower foothills, dark dots were circling in the air.
"The birds again," said Aragorn, pointing down.
"That cannot be helped now," said Gandalf. "Whether they are good or evil, or have nothing to do with us at all, we must go down at once. Not even on the knees of Carathras will we wait for another nightfall."
A cold wind flowed down behind them as they turned their backs on the Redhorn Gate and stumbled wearily down the slope. Carathras had defeated them. Chapter 4. A Journey in the Dark. It was evening, and the grey light was again waning fast when they halted for the night. They were very weary. The mountains were veiled in deepening dusk, and the wind was cold. Gandalf spared them one more mouthful each of the Mirovor of Rivendell. When they had eaten some food, he called a council.
"We cannot, of course, go on again tonight," he said. "The attack on the Redhorn Gate has tired us out, and we must rest here for a while."
"And then where are we to go?" asked Frodo.
"We still have our journey and our errand before us," answered Gandalf. "We have no choice but to go on, or to return to Rivendell."
Pippin's face brightened visibly at the mere mention of return to Rivendell. Merry and Sam looked away hopefully, but Aragorn and Boromir made no sign. Frodo looked troubled. "I wish I was back there," he said. "But how can I return without shame, unless there is indeed no other way, and we are already defeated?"
"You are right, Frodo," said Gandalf. "To go back is to admit defeat, and to face worse defeat to come. If we go back now, then the ring must remain there. We shall not be able to set out again. Then sooner or later Rivendell will be besieged, and after a brief and bitter time it will be destroyed. The Ringwraiths are deadly enemies, but they are only shadows yet of the power and terror they would possess if the ruling ring was on their master's hand again."
"Then we must go on, if there's a way," said Frodo with a sigh. Sam sank back into gloom.
"There is a way that we may attempt," said Gandalf. "I thought from the beginning, when I first considered this journey, that we should try it. But it is not a pleasant way, and I have not spoken of it to the company before. Aragorn was against it until the pass over the mountains had at least been tried."
"If it's a worse road than the Redhorn Gate, then it must be evil indeed," said Merry. "But you'd better tell us all about it, and let us know the worst at once."
"The road that I speak of leads to the mines of Moria," said Gandalf. Only Gimli lifted up his head. A smouldering fire was in his eyes. On all the others a dread fell at the mention of that name. Even to the hobbits it was a legend of vague fear.
"The road may lead to Moria, but how can we hope that it will lead through Moria?" said Aragorn darkly.
"It is a name of ill omen," said Boromir. "Nor do I see the need to go there. If we cannot cross the mountains, let us journey southwards until we come to the Gap of Rohan, where men are friendly to my people, taking the road that I followed on my way hither. Or we might pass by and cross the ice and into Langstrand and Lebenin, and so come to Gondor from the regions nigh to the sea."
"Things have changed since you came north, Boromir," answered Gandalf. "Did you not hear what I told you of Saruman? With him I may have business of my own ere all is over. But the ring must not come near Isengard, if that can be by any means prevented. The Gap of Rohan is closed to us while we go with the bearer. As for the longer road, we cannot afford the time. We might spend a year in such a journey, and we should pass through many lands that are empty and harbourless. Yet they would not be safe. The watchful eyes of both Saruman and of the enemy are on them. When you came north, Boromir, you were in the enemy's eyes only one stray wanderer from the south, and a matter of small concern to him. His mind was busy with the pursuit of the ring. But you return now as a member of the ring's company, and you are in peril as long as you remain with us. The danger will increase with every league that we go south under the naked sky. Since our open attempt on the mountain pass, our plight has become more desperate, I fear. I see now little hope, if we do not soon vanish from sight for a while and cover our trail. Therefore I advise that we should go neither over the mountains nor round them, but under them. There is a road at any rate that the enemy will least expect us to take.
"'We do not know what he expects,' said Boromir. "'He may watch all roads, likely and unlikely. "'In that case to enter Moria would be to walk into a trap, "'hardly better than knocking at the gates of the Dark Tower itself. "'The name of Moria is Black.'
"'You speak of what you do not know "'when you liken Moria to the stronghold of Sauron,' answered Gandalf. "'I alone of you have ever been in the dungeons of the Dark Lord, "'and only in his older and lesser dwelling in Dol Guldur. "'Those who pass the gates of Barad-dûr do not return. "'But I would not lead you into Moria if there were no hope of coming out again. "'If there are orcs there, it may prove ill for us, that is true.' But most of the orcs of the Misty Mountains were scattered or destroyed in the Battle of Five Armies. The eagles report that orcs are gathering again from afar, but there is a hope that Moria is still free. There is even a chance that dwarves are there, and that in some deep hall of his father's, Balin, son of Fundin, may be found. However it may prove, one must tread the path that need chooses."
"'I will tread the path with you, Gandalf,' said Gimli. "'I will go and look on the halls of Durin, whatever may wait there, if you can find the doors that are shut.'
"'Good, Gimli,' said Gandalf. "'You encourage me. We will seek the hidden doors together, and we will come through. In the ruins of the dwarves, a dwarf's head will be less easy to bewilder than elves or men or hobbits.' Yet it will not be the first time that I have been to Moria. I sought there long for Thrain, son of Thror, after he was lost. I passed through, and I came out again alive.
I too once passed the Dimrul Gate, said Aragorn quietly. But though I also came out again, the memory is very evil. I don't wish to enter Moria a second time.
And I don't wish to enter it even once, said Pippin.
Nor me. "'Muttered Sam.
"'Of course not,' said Gandalf. "'Who would? But the question is, "'who will follow me if I lead you there?'
"'I will,' said Gimli eagerly.
"'I will,' said Aragorn heavily. "'You followed my lead almost to disaster in the snow, "'and have said no word of blame. "'I will follow your lead now, "'if this last warning does not move you. "'It's not of the ring.' "'Nor of us others that I'm thinking now, but of you, Gandalf. "'And I say to you, if you pass the doors of Moria, beware.'
"'I will not go,' said Boromir, "'not unless the vote of the whole company is against me. "'What do Legolas and the little folk say? "'The ring-bearer's voice surely should be heard.'
"'I do not wish to go to Moria,' said Legolas. "'The hobbit said nothing. "'Sam looked at Frodo.' At last Frodo spoke. "'I do not wish to go,' he said, "'but neither do I wish to refuse the advice of Gandalf. "'I beg that there should be no vote until we've slept on it. "'Gandalf will get votes easier in the light of the morning than in this cold gloom. "'How the wind howls!' "'At these words all fell into silent thought. "'They heard the wind hissing among the rocks and trees,' and there was a howling and wailing round them in the empty spaces of the night. Suddenly Aragorn leaped to his feet.
"'How the wind howls!' he cried. "'It is howling with wolf voices. "'The wargs have come west of the mountains.'
"'Need we wait until morning, then?' said Gandalf. "'It's as I said, the hunt is up. "'Even if we live to see the dawn... "'Who now will wish to journey south by night "'with the wild wolves on his trail?'
"'How far is Moria?' asked Boromir.
"'There was a door southwest of Carathras, "'some 15 miles as the crow flies, "'and maybe 20 as the wolf runs,' answered Gandalf grimly. "'Then let us start as soon as it's light tomorrow, if we can,' said Boromir. "'The wolf that one hears is worse than the orc that one fears.'
"'True,' said Aragorn, "'loosening his sword in its sheath. "'But where the warg howls, "'there also the orc prowls.' "'I wish I'd taken Elrond's advice,' "'muttered Pippin to Sam. "'I'm no good after all. "'There's not enough of the breed of Bandobras "'the bull-roarer in me. "'These howls freeze my blood.
I don't ever remember feeling so wretched.
My heart's right down in my toes, Mr. Pippin, said Sam. But we aren't eaten yet, and there are some stout folk here with us. Whatever may be in store for old Gandalf, I'll wager it isn't a wolf's belly. For their defence in the night, the company climbed to the top of the small hill under which they had been sheltering. It was crowned with a knot of old and twisted trees, about which lay a broken circle of boulder stones. In the midst of this they lit a fire, for there was no hope that darkness and silence would keep their trail from discovery by the hunting packs. Round the fire they sat, and those that were not on guard dozed uneasily. Poor Bill the pony trembled and sweated where he stood. The howling of the wolves was now all round them, sometimes nearer and sometimes further off. In the dead of the night many shining eyes were seen peering over the brow of the hill. Some advanced almost to the ring of stones. At a gap in the circle, a great dark wolf shape could be seen halted, gazing at them. A shuddering howl broke from him, as if he were a captain summoning his pack to the assault. Gandalf stood up and strode forward, holding his staff aloft.
"Listen, Hound of Sauron!" he cried. "Gandalf is here! Fly if you value your foul skin! I will shrivel you from tail to snout if you come within this ring!"
The wolf snarled and sprang towards them with a great leap. At that moment there was a sharp twang. Legolas had loosed his bow. There was a hideous yell, and the leaping shape thudded to the ground. The elvish arrow had pierced its throat. The watching eyes were suddenly extinguished. Gandalf and Aragorn strode forward, but the hill was deserted. The hunting packs had fled. All about them the darkness grew silent, and no cry came on the sighing wind. The night was old, and westward the waning moon was setting, gleaming fitfully through the breaking clouds. Suddenly Frodo started from sleep. Without warning, a storm of howls broke out fierce and wild all about the camp. A great host of wargs had gathered silently, and was now attacking them from every side at once.
"Fling fuel on the fire!" cried Gandalf to the hobbits. "Draw your blades, and stand back to back!"
In the leaping light, as the fresh wood blazed up, Frodo saw many grey shapes spring over the ring of stones. More and more followed. Through the throat of one huge leader, Aragorn passed his sword with a thrust. With a great sweep, Boromir hewed the head off another. Beside them, Gimli stood with his stout legs apart, wielding his dwarf axe. In the wavering firelight, Gandalf seemed suddenly to grow. He rose up, a great menacing shape like the monument of some ancient king of stone set upon a hill. Stooping like a cloud, he lifted a burning branch and strode to meet the wolves. They gave back before him. High in the air he tossed the blazing brand. It flared with a sudden white radiance like lightning, and his voice rolled like thunder.
"Nar Arnedraith Armin! Nar Dungarhoth!" he cried.
There was a roar and a crackle, and the tree above him burst into a leaf and bloom of blinding flame. The fire leapt from treetop to treetop. The whole hill was crowned with dazzling light. The swords and knives of the defenders shone and flickered. The last arrow of Legolas kindled in the air as it flew, and plunged, burning into the heart of a great wolf chieftain. All the others fled. Slowly the fire died, till nothing was left but falling ash and sparks. A bitter smoke curled above the burned tree stumps, and blew darkly from the hill, as the first light of dawn came dimly in the sky. Their enemies were routed and did not return.
"What did I tell you, Mr. Pippin?" said Sam, sheathing his sword. "Wolves won't get him." "That was an eye-opener and no mistake. Nearly singed the hair off my head.